Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Happy Monday. I hope everyone had a fantastic week, weekend. I'm Justin Nimmergood. I'm your host today. Our co-host, Bruce Cameron, poor guy. He's out on vacation enjoying some beach weather, so we wish him well. He's probably going to come back with a fantastic tan that we're all going to be jealous of. But I'm Justin Nimmergood again, looking forward today with my guest here, Mr. Stephen Braheny from Sierra Bravo. I'm going to share more about him in a second. Real quick, I did want to just address for our Facebook Live listeners out there today, because we're actually testing a little something new here today at In Good Company HQ with Facebook Live. So all our listeners out there, be staying tuned and plugged into our channels, because we're actually going to be coming at you via video here in the coming weeks and months ahead. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Justin. Good to be here.
It's exciting times. So Stephen, Stephen and I admittedly have known each other for a little bit now. Stephen is the proud president and CEO of Sierra Bravo Consulting, which is you founded about 4.5 years ago here in Southern California. Prior to that, Stephen was actually an executive with AT&T for over 20 years. He served in the telecom industry. He's also served with another company called MyCom for several years, amidst others. So this gentleman, you know, to my left here, just brings a wealth of experience and knowledge with him when it comes to a business perspective. Prior to, you know, serving, I would say, in corporate America, and obviously now more notably as a management consultant and executive advisor, Stephen, actually served. He served in the Army. So I'm sure he'll share a little bit about his stories of service here with you today.
Got a few.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. He's quite the storyteller for those of you that don't know him, which I'm looking forward to introducing him here and letting him share some of his stories. But he's also the proud father of three daughters, single father of three daughters, and a devout Christian as well, which I'm sure he'll share with you some, you know, again, integrated in some of the stories. So, Stephen, welcome to the show. We're so blessed and honored to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Great to be here. Absolutely. So, Stephen, just, you know, I know I shared a bit about you and kind of your high-level bio, if you will, but, you know, in your own words, I mean, Tell the listeners and, again, our viewers out there, tell them a little bit about yourself.
I appreciate that. Yeah, well, thanks again for having me. And as you mentioned some of the things already, I'll kind of reiterate. But from my perspective, who I am, humble follower of Jesus Christ, first and foremost, proud father of a single dad of three beautiful daughters, and a sibling to five wonderful brothers and sisters, and a part of a huge family. I've got over 60 first cousins.
60? Did you say that right?
60. It's a big, big family, amazing group of people from all over the world. And so, U.S. Army veteran and aviator, did that for about 10 years in the Army National Guard and Reserves. VMI class of 1989. So, hello to my brother rats out there. Small business owners, you mentioned before. A seasoned entrepreneur. Self-admittedly.
Using the word entrepreneur. I like that.
Absolutely.
I'll come back to that.
And an aspiring talk show guest.
Okay. Well, it's more than aspiring now, Stephen, because now you are actual guest. So
I'm living the dream.
Living the dream. Speaking of that, and I'm sure you're going to tell some more stories, but for those of you listeners out there, actually my first time visiting the LA Talk Radio station and brought Stephen along with me. So for those of you that have seen our post out on social media, that is actually from LA Talk Radio HQ there in Sherman Oaks. I don't know if maybe just share a little bit about your experience there.
Outstanding. Had a great day. Met some amazing people with just incredible backgrounds and a varied set of perspectives. Really, really phenomenal experience on Saturday. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Happy to bring you along for the ride.
And there was a lot of storytelling that day as well.
I bet. I bet. Speaking of stories, why don't you tee us up here, Stephen, with, sure. you know, maybe kind of going back. And for those of you that are just getting to know Stephen, and hopefully you've taken a little time to read up on him, really impressive track record. Stephen's focus for his business in particular, but it's not just business. It's integrated in everything this man does in life, right? I call him the steady hand, right? The man is just ridiculously cool under pressure. I would assume some of that goes back to your service, sure. you know, your days in the service and being able to really learn the tools the tools, if you will, to put in your tool belt to say, hey, no matter what situation comes my way, I got a way to tackle this and be super cool under pressure, right? You know, you shared some stories with me the other day that were just quite impressive. I don't know, maybe you could start there, because I think it's a really helpful journey and story arc, you know, for our listeners out there to really get an appreciation of who you are, not just as an entrepreneur and a business owner, but also just as a man, right?
Sure. I'm happy to. I think everybody has a testimony, and my experience in my life is a unique experience for me that I can speak well about, and I will today. But everybody has a testimony, and that testimony just speaks a lot to who we are and why we are who we are. And a lot of that comes from our experiences, and they're very right, life experiences, educational experiences, business experiences, you know, all and the like, right? And we're surrounded by amazing people, right? So I pride myself to have had, you know, walk now for going on 52 years.
Wow.
Right. Started in New York City.
He looks about 30 years young, though, doesn't he, folks? I mean,
younger by the day. So, yeah, age is just a point of reference. It's a number, not. So, I born and raised in New York City. Been around for a while, and I've met some amazing people in that walk, and had some incredible experiences, and not all fun and positive and all roses necessarily. Right. There have been some galvanizing experiences that I've been through. And to your point before about my ability to be calm under pressure, a lot of it has to do with my exposure to pressure and being able to experience it first and foremost, but to be able to process it and understand how to navigate through it. Right, and not alone. You know, first and foremost, again, know that. You know, you've got a divine presence always, mm-hmm. and that helps, you know, keep me centered and grounded and hopeful. But I'm also surrounded by amazing people through his hand, clearly, that enable me to navigate through difficult times. Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've got some personal experiences I won't share a ton about, but growing up in New York City, as you can imagine, is pretty intense,
yeah.
An intense place for those that visit and those that live there know what that looks like and feels like every day. So it started there. And I've got a varied set of experiences in life and in business. Drove a cab in the Bronx, as an example.
That in itself is a major accomplishment.
Right.
Navigating the traffic across the boroughs. Absolutely. There.
And one of my favorite jobs, too, by the way, getting to interact with the public and people, everybody from, you know, CXOs down to frontline people, just average everyday, you know, hardworking people. And it was one of the best experiences I've had. I'll tell you a little example early on in my career, too, as a second lieutenant. Walking into a unit filled with, you know, warrant officers with 20, 30 plus years of experience and in aviation. Right, where I hadn't even been to flight school yet. And I'm in charge, right? And these guys had 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 flight hours. And many of them, I was very fortunate to be serving with guys in the National Guard who had served in combat in Vietnam. So they had, you know, experience that, you know, that was tested and tried and quite a bit of, again, galvanized under the most extreme pressure. And so as a second lieutenant walking into that unit, as you can imagine, I wasn't the pro. I wasn't the expert. I wasn't the one that had been there, done that.
Right.
But I had a group of people that had. Mm. And I learned very early in my military career, but it helped me in business as well, because I was in the National Guard and I was doing this on the weekends and then showing up to work on Monday in the business setting. And I applied some of the learnings to both, kind of across the two. And what I learned very quickly was to trust and value the people that were on my team and look to them for their wisdom and their advice and counsel when I made decisions. And that helped me quite a bit. And I learned that fast. I learned that early.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating. And trust, I mean, so I put the coaching hat on for a moment. Trust is just a really tough one to break through, you know, break down barriers with, especially, I would imagine, you know, in these armed forces, right? Where you're dealing with rank and command, and you're dealing with, you know, silos of communication somewhat. So how did you break through?
Yeah, so the trust piece for me was easy. Looking at these guys, because they had a repertoire, you know, they had medals, you know, they had years of service, you know, so obviously they brought a lot to the table. Me, on the other hand, is a little different, right? So them trusting me was a different story. And so there's no way I could put on the table my experience to match theirs or, you know, technical capabilities to match theirs. Rank, sure, and they respected the rank, and you always do. But what they quickly learned to trust about me was that I honored them and involved them in the decision-making process. And so if I came in there suggesting I knew it all, I did trust it to be right out the window. They'd follow orders to the letter, but they, you know, the heart and the spirit behind those actions wouldn't have been there, right? So when I involved them in the decision-making process and engaged with them and trusted them, that went a long way, and that helped them trust me in turn.
Fascinating. And so I'm going to fast forward your story a little bit here to another one of my favorite stories that you've shared. And by the way, for all you listeners out there, just another, I'm going to slide another little nugget in there about Stephen. He's actually my executive advisor, by the way. Mm-hmm. So for those of you that have followed my journey for the last 12 months while I've been on this podcast on LA Talk Radio, the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio, you've heard me talk a lot about my weekly daily experiences. And it's without a doubt that I can't even imagine where I would be today without this gentleman. So one of the first things I did in the first hires, I'll call it, that I made when I signed on with one of my recent consulting projects was an executive advisor. It was the type of project that required someone to help give that extra seasoning, and I would say perspective, because we all have blind spots, right? And especially a project of this magnitude, you know, I just couldn't afford not to be aware of those blind spots, nor could I afford to be, you know, frazzled under pressure, which is commonly the case. Stephen has multiple examples of that, and just brings that. I mean, it's, I would say, pumping through your veins, to be honest. And so I've just really appreciated that about him. So just for you listeners out there, you know, Stephen comes with a perspective of he's seen it all, he's done it all. And again, I personally know him, but even beyond that, even if I didn't know him, these are the type of people you want in your corner. So for all you listeners out there and you watchers, if you're a CEO or you're a CXO trying to drive some major initiatives for your company, I will tell you, again, putting my coaching hat on for a moment, one of the first hires you want to make is either an executive advisor or someone that can be sort of your, I'll call it, right hand. And definitely, you know, Stephen is definitely that for me. So thanks again, Stephen. Really appreciate all the help and service you've provided for me. So getting back to you, you've shared some stories with me in particular over the weekend, and I think this is a nice segue from your story about the armed services, the armed forces, that you were one of those, fortunate or unfortunate, I don't know how you want to look at this, by the way, you know, the ungodly acts that happened on 9/11.
Sure.
You were one of those that was actually very intimately a part of that day.
In the thick of it, sure.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit about that and kind of what happened? Just share your story with respect to 9/11, because I don't know about you, but I know for me and everyone out there that certainly was in America at that time, I think everyone can recall with succinct memory exactly where they were and what they were doing on 9/11.
Sure. Absolutely. vividly. You know, some times in history, and thank you for your comments about you know, being your executive advisor. And I can tell you that there's a mutual benefit that we share, kind of a mutual admiration society here. But you know, I have years of experience and education and business experiences that I can share with you, and I do. But I also learn from you on a daily basis as well. And it's I think that's important no matter what age or status or stage in life you're in. I think you can continue to learn and be open. I think we have a great, you know, combination relationship in that regard. So thank you. 9/11, yeah, it was a defining moment, a point in time. It's a few points in history where people remember exactly where they were on that time and day. You know, the JFK assassination is a big one for folks that lived in the 60s. You know, people knew where they were and how they reacted at the time it occurred. And on 9/11, I was on a flight out of Newark Airport on my way to Seattle with three other folks that I was traveling with. And I got about halfway across the country, and we were diverted to Minneapolis-St. Paul on a flight. We didn't know what was going on. The pilot came on the intercom and explained that we were being diverted. And I figured, as an aviator at the time, that it was just a maintenance, you know, minor maintenance issue that they had to check out. But I do remember the maneuver was pretty extreme from my recollection. And it was a pretty rapid descending right-hand turn that the guy made. not typical for a commercial aircraft.
Not your typical, hey, we're kind of, you know, guiding this into the landing zone. Like, hey, this is a sharp right turn.
Yeah. So it was
probably felt it in your gut.
Yeah. Yeah. More of a military maneuver. So I suspect this guy might have had some time in the military as well. And somebody was sitting next to me, kind of remarked about what occurred. And I remember sharing with her that what I just shared with you, that I suspect it was probably just a minor maintenance thing. And if it was anything more serious, we'd know.
Right.
But, you know, the aircraft was fine, and that was the nature of my comment. But when we landed and we taxied and we pulled into the gate, the pilot then came on the intercom and explained that we were under attack. And that plane had been flown into the World Trade Center, both towers and the Pentagon, and that we were effectively at war at the time. And the young lady I was sitting next to actually came racing onto the plane very late with a knapsack, and I was sitting in bulkhead. And I remember she came in, she was a little frazzled, and I helped her put a pretty heavy knapsack backpack in the overhead bin and sat down. And I was the type of person, because I was a pilot, that when I boarded a plane, because I wasn't flying, I really didn't want to stay awake. I'd rather just go to sleep. Right? So I don't have any work to do, so I'd rather just crash.
Yeah, yeah. And then just start snoozing away.
So I wasn't really a big talker, but because of how she came onto the plane, it provoked, you know, conversation, interaction.
Sure.
And so I asked her, you know, what she was doing, where she was going, and she told me that she was a college student heading back to school in Seattle, and that she had just left her parents on a trip to Europe for the summer. I said, oh, that's great. I said, where are your parents heading? And she said, well, my dad's heading back to work in the Pentagon. I said, well, wow, that's pretty amazing. Hmm. So what does he do? Well, he's a brigadier general. He's responsible for the reserve forces in the U.S. And at the time, you know, that was something that was really relevant to me. I thought that was pretty interesting. So that provoked a pretty lengthy conversation. We actually spoke for the entire 1.5 hours that we were in the air. And so when the pilot came on and said that plane has been flown into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, it was very real for her and for us, right? So I remember, you know, getting up out of the seat as we departed the plane and just looking at her face. She didn't have a cell phone at the time, and I had a business phone with me. And I knew that she absolutely had to reach out, make the attempt to connect. And I knew full well there was not a very slim chance that she would get a phone call into the Pentagon. But I knew she had to try. So I gave her my phone. I let her try a couple of times. And as I suspected, she got a fast, busy couple of times on it, right? So I got the phone back from her, and I wished her well. And kind of we went on our way. Next phone call I made was, as you can imagine, to home. And I spoke with my wife on the other end of the phone, and she was hysterical. She was crying, and she was quite upset. And I didn't get it initially. Mm. I didn't understand why. And I was really curious to find out more about what was going on. What was shared by the pilot was very low. And so then it dawned on me what was going on and why she was so hysterical. Hmm. She had no idea what flight we were on. She said that. She said, I didn't know if she were okay. And so I said, listen, honey, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm in Minneapolis. I'm not sure where I'm going to get, how I'm going to get back. I don't know what I'm doing next necessarily, but I'm good. I'm okay. And I'll talk to you soon. And I love you.
Wow.
Next phone call I made was to Amex Travel.
Smart phone call, probably.
And I know that sounds kind of funny, but it's very practical. And so I knew that we were on a flight to Seattle, and we had hotels booked, we had cars booked, we had the logistics were all set up for a trip to Seattle. But we weren't going to Seattle anymore, and we were in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so we needed to adjust quickly, right? And so I made that call to Amex Travel to book hotel rooms, not just for me, but for my travel partners. There were four of us traveling together at the time. And to rent a car, get a rental car. And I'm glad I did, because I'll tell you, by the time we got to the kiosk, the line was the entire length of the terminal.
I remember you telling me this part of the story. And so that's where you, as a travel passenger, you're like freaking out on the inside, right? But you being, and I don't know if I go as far to say a planner, but having the foresight, given a serious situation like this, just that, as we say, fight, flight, or freeze moment, you made the right call.
Yeah. Well, you got to move, right? You can sit still, with your point. I had a couple of folks that were with me at the time, and they were frozen, like many of the passengers on the plane. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know what was going on. And it's a very uncommon event, not something that happens every day, right? So people are habitual. They do things out of habit most of the time, right?
Right.
So here's a circumstance they've never seen before. So what do you do? And so we had a couple of folks like that. And that's not me. I mean, I've been faced with a lot of situations in my life and in my career. And this was just another one, right? One of many. And so, we get on with business. We took care of things. We made things happen, and we moved out smartly, as we like to say in the military. And so one of the other gentlemen that was traveling with me, we knew that our bags were checked and destined for Seattle, and that because we're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, we couldn't go to the baggage claim area, right? So we had to go actually get our bags from a storage area. So I handed him the claim checks for all of us and said, hey, could you take care of that? And I diverted to go in to get the rental car, right? So thank God we did the reservation, because I will tell you that long, long line took about an hour and a half to get through from where we entered the line to the front of the kiosk. And by the time we got to the kiosk, the line was moving very fast, as you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
because everybody was walking up there without a reservation saying, I'd like a car, and they were out of cars. Right.
Wow.
A lot of planes descended on an airport that did not anticipate them. Right. And so obviously from a logistical standpoint, they didn't have enough cars to service everybody. Same with hotel rooms and the like. And so when I got to the front of the line, I had my reservation, thank God, because I had called Amex. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I gave him my reservation number and gave him my name and driver's license. And she pulled up my reservation and she said, Mr. Haynes, it's great to have you. And, thank you for making a reservation. See, you have a mid-sized car reserved. I'm sorry, we're out of them, but I have I can upgrade you for no additional cost to a Ford Mustang convertible.
Yeah, the dichotomy of that, option. Hey, it's a crisis time, but would you like to drive a sports car cross country?
It's really, really helpful.
Maybe not.
Considering the circumstance. Oh, I said any other circumstance, I'd jump all over that. I'd love that.
I'd love that option.
However,
but not today.
Not today. I said, what else do you have? And she said, well, the only other thing I have, I could upgrade you to a premium for, again, no additional fee because of the situation, so a Lincoln Continental. And I said, absolutely. We'll take it.
Okay.
So we got to travel, I'll call it in comfort and somewhat style, four of us heading back to New York for the next day and a half in a Lincoln Continental. So
Wow. That story, like when you told me that story, which he's told me this story a couple times now, by the way, but every time he adds little pieces of it that I haven't heard before. And again, for any of you that were either involved in 9/11, I mean, everyone, I think virtually, you know, that's been around long enough has heard about the incident, right? So let's assume that's the case, but was around, you know, or in or around the city or were affected because either you or someone you loved was in or part of either, you know, New York City or one of those flight systems or traveling somewhere for that day. I mean, what an episode to be a part of, right? And to handle it with, it's more than ease. Like, I think this is where one of these divine words, like grace, I would say, sure, comes into play. With handled with such grace, such poise, it's a testament to you, right? And I think part of that's characteristic, it's pedigree,
sure,
how you were raised, your upbringing, and core characteristics perhaps that you've developed over the years that have made you, again, an invaluable asset to companies and just people, you know, whether you're friends and family or whether you're, you know, a company, a large Fortune 500 company, people like Steven are the type of people you want in your corner. There's no doubt about that. I love that story when you shared it with me again the other day, but you kind of added some elements to it that I was like, huh, I didn't remember hearing that before.
And it's interesting you talk about the impacts. That day, just I don't know if I share this with you either, but my youngest sister was actually on duty as a New York City cop.
Oh, really?
And you know, there was an all points bulletin that went out that day that they hadn't seen, I think, in the lifespan of the NYPD, as you can imagine. So she was on duty, and she wound up guarding the Triborough Bridge.
You know, wow.
Subsequently, right? My oldest sister was a letter carrier in the Bronx, and I don't know if you recall, but there was the incident where they were mailing the chemical substance in the mail around that same time frame, mm-hmm, right? So there's, you know, potential risk and impact there. And then my younger brother was also a volunteer fireman, not in New York City, but as you know, the effect on first responders that day was dramatic in New York City, but that affected, you know, brotherhood of folks across the country.
Absolutely.
The world, really, in solidarity. So every fireman and woman and policeman and woman that day felt what was going on there in New York City. So the impacts to my immediate family were significant.
Yeah, I can bet. I bet. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And by the way, would you share, I know you dissected that day, right? And I want to make sure we get to one of your other stories too. But quickly, and again, this is the tactical kind of operational mind that Steven is. The flight sequence, just sort of what you observed or what you were able to discern about the flight numbers specifically?
Oh, yeah. It's a little bit of conspiracy theory kind of stuff, but there's a lot of validity to it. You know, when operational planning, when this kind of stuff is done by the good guys or the bad guys in this case, they do it with simplicity in mind, things that you can remember easily and you don't have to write down, right? So from an operational security standpoint. But the flight numbers, if you look at them, they sequence from, you know, 11, mm-hmm, you know, to 1293. You know, when you add up the flight numbers, the numbers reflect a sequence from 11 through 15.
Mm.
And so the combination of numbers in my flight was actually 16. So I have a pretty good sense that, you know, that day there were many, many more targets,
mm-hmm,
you know, and likely many more planes, at least as prospects for hijacking, than were actually taken.
Wow. Yeah. Conspiracy theory or not, I think, you know, your ability to sort of see patterns, right.
Sure.
And say, hey, what are the operational efficiencies or inefficiency of that are really astounding. So thanks for sharing that story. And again, you know, I would say my personal, and I'm sure I speak for you as well, you know, condolences to those that may have been impacted by the day, which I know the numbers are pretty vast
sure,
now to date. So let's move forward. So that's the kind of historical perspective. carry on with the storytelling from Stephen, if we will. You know, I really love the next story, or another one of my favorite stories you share. And again, this is, now we're transitioning kind of into the business realm, if you will, a little bit. Your days at AT&T, you came into some really crazy shit, let's say, right? You know, to put it bluntly. And I think, I mean, you have some interesting stories, but there's one in particular where, again, dealing with sort of a crisis situation where you were tasked with stepping up as a leader. As I think you were an individual contributor at the time.
I was a manager.
You're a manager at the time? Yeah. But asked to, you know, step up in a time, again, a time of crisis, and just, can you just share a little bit about that story?
Sure. And sure, before I do, too, I think to your point earlier, one of the common threads across many of these is that each of these crises, right, were significant events, and they weren't fun in any way, right? They were bad things. But out of those bad things, and I used to, as a young kid especially, consider, you know, bad things that happened as not so good, as curses, as things that I didn't welcome, didn't want,
right,
and wasn't thrilled to have.
Right.
It wasn't until much later in my life, after having quite a few of them, and having somebody share a different perspective about how to look at them, that I realized the benefit of having those life experiences and going through stuff like that. And so the particular instance you're referring to is we had Hurricane Floyd.
Oh, yeah.
In the Northeast, come up the coast and dumped a ton of water on the Northeast. And it just so happened that it coincided with my 10-year reunion at VMI.
No kidding. And it's always funny how things come in like twos or threes oftentimes, right?
Interesting scenario. And so I was ready to go to my reunion and spend a little bit of time with my classmates, my brother Rats, and looked at the weather reports and thought, there's no way I want to spend the next 5-6 hours driving through a hurricane. Rainstorm. Maybe a hurricane, not so much. No. And so I decided to wait and not leave. That would be Wednesday evening. I'd leave Thursday in the morning. And sure. So I'd taken the time off from work, you know, Thursday and Friday, and I figured, okay, I'll travel down there on Thursday. I'll get down there, you know, mid-afternoon Thursday and enjoy the rest of the weekend. Well, as fate may have it, the hurricane hit. It dumped water like you wouldn't believe. And part of northern New Jersey, where I lived and worked, to the point where it caused flooding in a 500-year floodplain, right? Just unheard of, very rare circumstance. And it took out, you know, one of the facilities for us where I was working at the time that was responsible for the wireless communications for AT&T in northern New Jersey. Completely took it out. And so... needless to say, I changed my plans.
Yeah, and it's probably smart, right? What is the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different outcomes. Right? Yeah, no.
So obviously, my vacation plans were canceled, and my trip to my alma mater was shelved, and I didn't get a chance to see them for another 5 years. But for the next few days, we spent quite a bit of time bailing out, literally, from that flood.
Huh.
And
buckets of water,
in some cases,
a little bit,
thimbles, you know, spoons, buckets, whatever, to literally, you know, recover from that situation. So, wow. Just to give you a sense, all of the, you know, wireline and wireless was out in northern New Jersey at that point. Nobody, business or consumer, zero telecommunications, which is a rare event. I mean, the telecommunications industry prides itself on quality and reliability, and these kinds of situations don't typically happen.
Right.
And the reason in this case that it did was because the wireless and wireline facilities were right next door to one another. So we had a facility in Rochelle Park, New Jersey, that was literally... You're 50 feet away from the telephone building for that part of the New Jersey. So 5-6 feet of water, the equipment for them and for us was under that much water. So for the next days and really weeks.
And what, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what year was this? Just to provide some context.
1999.
Yeah. So obviously cell phones kind of, you know, you had some, but it wasn't like certainly a smartphone era.
No, well before that.
You know, so just to put it in context for all you listeners out there, right? So when you don't have access to one of the major, if not the major, telecom players across the U.S., again, causes a state of emergency, right? Yeah. State of crisis.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of interest in the recovery efforts. And so I just a couple of weeks prior to that, I was kind of reassigned to a different area of responsibility. I actually worked in the building that was affected. We had a network operations center there, and we had just wrapped up moving all of those functions out to Nashville One in Bothell, Washington, at our headquarters, coincident with our headquarters at the time. And so I was kind of between jobs, if you will. I was moving down to the GNOC with AT&T in Bedminster, New Jersey, with a handful of the folks that worked for me there. But we hadn't started work yet. So that was why it was a great opportunity to take some time, go to my reunion.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as fate would have it, that was, you know, redirected. And so I showed up on site, you know, voluntarily to see what was going on, because I had this is back in the days of pagers as well, text messages. So we would get alerts on, you know, effects to the network. Mm-hmm. And I got text messages indicating that, you know, the Rochelle Park MSC was affected. I thought, that's impossible. You know, if anything, the Teterboro MSC, which was actually a low area, kind of a swampy area, would have been the one affected, because I'd worked there for a while and I actually seen flooding in the parking lot. So I thought, if any place is affected, it would be that one. But they mentioned Rochelle Park, which had me scratching my head. So I actually drove over there. And at the time, I was driving a Lincoln Navigator, so I had some pretty good ground clearance. But even then, I mean, there were times where I was driving through water that was probably halfway up the doorway. So
wow,
it was pretty
maybe
intense.
Not as bad as like a Katrina, you know, aftermath. Yeah, but for that particular area, and again, for technical operations, this is huge. This is devastating.
Yeah.
So I'd love for the listeners to hear about, like, what did you do then, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so there's this state of emergency. Shit has hit the fan.
Yeah.
What now?
Yeah. So, I mean, you go through those phases of you either run away, you run towards it, or you freeze in place, you know, because of a set of circumstances. And again, I speak for me and my experiences, but I'll tell you, in every case, as I mentioned before, I'm surrounded by people, part of a team that's tackling this, right? So each and every one of the circumstances I refer to, there are many people with me and like me responding to these circumstances. And in some cases, people that did it in remarkable and admirable ways, even well above and beyond my response. And that's the cool thing about it. Whether it's 9/11 or the scenario I'm talking about, it really galvanizes people and teams, right? You either respond and have infighting under pressure, or you band together and you tackle the problem together.
That's right.
And that's exactly what happened here in this scenario. So we, you know, it starts with assessing the situation. And so you ask the question, what did we do? We evaluated the circumstances, right? We understood, we actually had a scientist sent in to help us and assist with this kind of scenario, right? Because how many times, again, do you mix electronic equipment and water? You just don't do it,
right?
Either intentionally or otherwise. And so these are rare events. And when they occur, you need to treat them accordingly, right? So we had a specialist, a scientist literally, come in and assess the water content to identify whether, you know, the saline content of the water, was it salt water and corrosive? Was it fresh water and not so corrosive? That's important, right?
Yep.
We're dealing with equipment, metal, and electronic equipment. That's extremely important. Evaluating the facility and stability. There's a whole host of things that you want to do in the assessment process. And so we had that done. And it was probably about a 20-page report that the scientists produced within the first 24 hours. That
wow.
was absolutely phenomenal. And gave us, you know, an understanding, almost a blueprint on what we were dealing with, and then recommended actions that we would need to take. And so we organized based around that plan. And this comes to, you know, one of the things that I wanted to share today, which is, you know, philosophy of, you know, plan your work and work your plan. Right? Mm-hmm. No matter what the set of circumstances, as chaotic as the situation might be, you know, break it down, organize it, right? You want to convert that chaos into some semblance of structure and organization, right? You've got to have a plan to do that. And then you have to rally people around that plan to execute.
Great advice.
And so that's exactly what we did.
I hope you all took notes on that, by the way.
So that's exactly what we did. We tackled it. We had a plan. We had a team of folks. The amazing thing was, you talked about rank and titles. You talked about delineation of responsibilities, you know, functions. Everybody during that period of time put that stuff aside, and we had an absolute common purpose and mission at that point.
Sure.
And everybody focused on it and executed against it. And I'm really happy and pleased to reflect back and share with you that I mentioned that happened on a Thursday, right? Thursday night or Wednesday night into Thursday morning. By Sunday midday, we were making phone calls off of that facility.
Which, again, for those of you that don't understand the context of that, that's astounding. That's an astounding turnaround situation for, again, a complete state of crisis in a situation like that. Kudos to you. You know, and there's a reason I feel like, you know, as a believer in God, and again, putting my coaching hat on, I'm sure you would agree with this. We don't get asked to do certain things in certain situations unless it's already sort of known that we're capable of it.
Yeah, God won't give us things that he won't also grace us with the ability to manage. You know,
that's right.
So, and a lot of times the things, what he gives us is the people around us to help us get through it.
That's right. So true. So there's one other piece of Stephen's life that I want to make sure that we get here to do. And that is, you know, what are you up to today, right? So we've talked a lot about the history, and I think very important for the subscribers, listeners out there to hear your perspective, to know you're dealing with a, you know, almost 30-year seasoned veteran in all aspects of the word, from a business mind, from an intellect, you know, from, obviously you've been a father or are a father as well. What are you up to today, and what are you up to with Sierra Bravo specifically?
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, yeah, as I mentioned before, almost 52 years of life and 30 years of experience in business and military and the like, and as a dad, as a parent, as a sibling, as I mentioned, I've accumulated a number of experiences over my lifetime, and I've had a wonderful opportunity to interact and deal with and work with and live with people with a vast array of experiences and talents. And, you know, going through those situations, they were difficult and not pleasant.
Right.
Not stuff I look forward to. I'm not sure the things I do over again willingly in every case. But what I realized, and part of what defines my mission now in business and in life, is I have a incredible repertoire of experiences to draw on. And I've got a network of folks that I've been through these life experiences and business experiences with to tap into to help others, right? Because that's really what it's about, you know, this spirit of generosity and giving and working with people to tackle problems and help them solve their problems, right? Whether it's in life or in business. And so my management consulting business, that's what it's about, right? Leveraging the experience and the knowledge and the wisdom now, you know, intelligence and over time experience is really
that's
what
right.
defines wisdom. And so having that now, I can impart and share that with others while I continue to learn from them too and apply best practices and tackle problems to help them, you know, improve their business, improve their lives.
And so I know you've worked with several clients, you know, since founding Sierra Bravo. Could you maybe just speak about a couple examples or maybe either recent or historical examples and kind of most interesting or you know, insightful examples that you can draw upon and share with our listeners out there?
Sure.
So if they're listening, for example, they say, hey, I have someone that is similar to that, you know, they might think of you.
Sure, sure. So yeah, you mentioned, you know, my experience with AT&T and the military. and I started with AT&T as a credit analyst and left as a vice president of engineering operations. And so, you know, I have that experience at 10 years of military experience, up to the rank of captain, aviator. And I've had experience after AT&T as a president of managed services for MICOM globally and internationally, and a few other assignments subsequent to that that have been, you know, worthwhile and productive. And again, in each of these scenarios, I've leveraged my experience, my background,
right,
and the network of people that I've known over the years to aid them in tackling and solving their business opportunities and challenges. And so when I left AT&T, the reason, the motivation for doing so was to experience the international landscape. Mm. So my time at MICOM was exactly that. I got to travel and to interact with folks around the globe, in the Middle East, in Europe, South America. And I'll tell you, it is a global economy, a global ecosystem and world that we live in. And it's a much smaller one today than it's been in the past.
Right.
So being able to understand that and leverage that in a big way is the opportunity for us all.
Sure. I know you and I are particularly aligned at the hip with one of our projects right now. Can you just maybe give people, I know I talk about you, but can you just maybe give people a glimpse of what you provide as far as service for me as you see it? And so, I mean, again, I see you one way, but kind of how you see yourself and your role as my executive advisor specifically, you know, for the project with Fabric.
Of course. You and I have had this similar conversation recently, and I truly believe that you see yourself a certain way, right? But there's incredible value to the perspective that people have, especially the trusted folks that you have in your life, in your business and your personal life on you, right? Because you can see yourself and hear yourself a certain way, but there's a perspective that your trusted advisors provide you that you can't provide to yourself.
Right.
And so I offer that to you, and you know that, and I tell you things about you and how you tackle things in a very brutally honest way sometimes.
Really, me? A nimmer good, being honest, being a dry sense of humor.
Usually
not
well,
me.
Usually well received. And as I mentioned before, and we've talked about often, you give me a similar perspective on me. And that's the value, right? That's the mutual aid benefit of the advice and counsel. And so, you know, while we're business, you know, and life twins of sorts,
sure,
come at it from different perspectives. And, you know, we've got a good combination that we offer one another, and we offer the business world, right? The combination of enthusiasm and high energy and wisdom and experience. You know, it's a great 1-2 punch, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And again, I'm so grateful for having met you that, I would call it very interesting night in the hot tub many, many dark moons ago. And just obviously conversing and finding out all the similarities from there. But you brought up a good point, which I think is important to note, which is when you're seeking out an executive advisor, which to me is just a very narrowly defined coach. You're an executive coach, right? Advisor, coach, those terms are somewhat interchangeable, right? Look for someone that possesses skills that are different than you. Not completely, I'm talking where the polarity is opposite ends of the spectrum. You should have some common ground, right? And I think a lot of the common characteristics we agree upon. But as you said, there's things that you bring to the table that I just do not possess, and vice versa, right? And so for me, I was very deliberate when I was seeking out, again, first hire, executive advisor, right, / coach. I was very deliberate in that.
Right.
I wanted someone that was older, wiser than me, you know, even though he looks extremely young, he is a little bit older.
Getting younger.
And that brought a different set of perspectives to me, right? So I think that's important to note for all the listeners out there. So I know we're wrapping up on our time here, and I want to make sure everyone knows how to reach you. So, you know, Stephen, great time here today. Tell everyone, if you could, how can everyone get a hold of you if they might have executive advisor, management consulting, or just, you know, want to pop you a quick line or whatnot to learn more about you and Sierra Bravo?
Sure, sure. Well, I'm active on just about every element of social media, so that's probably the easiest way to find me. I do have a website, and I'm about to overhaul that. Give me a bit of time to pretty that up a bit, but Sierra Bravo LLC .com is my URL. You know, get on there. My contact information is on there. You can find out a little bit more about the business and what I offer. So
yeah. Thanks for joining us here today.
Of course.
And one last comment on Stephen. He's probably one of the few boomers out there I know that actually texts more than I do. So I actually had to get him to slow down in his texting. So if you're, especially if you're a millennial or Gen Xer and you like to text, or even if you're a boomer and you like to text, he's very adept at texting.
I prefer it.
He prefers it. So
yeah. Well, I got a point. Real quick, I'm going to end with this story, if you don't mind, about texting, because you teed it up. My mom, when I used to work at AT&T, would call me often on my cell phone. And as you can imagine, being an executive at AT&T throughout the business day, I was in meetings upon meetings and conference calls from start to finish, A to Z. And most of the time, what you would call, I'd be wrapped up in a meeting. I couldn't take a call to say hi to mom, right? So as soon as the call would come in, I'd redirect it to voicemail. But immediately afterward, I would text her and say, hey, mom, I can't talk to you right now. I'm in a meeting. I'll give you a call in a little bit. And then I would call her later and follow up with her. And one day, I'm sitting in a meeting, and all of a sudden, a text came in from my mom.
Oh, shit.
And she said, hey, I'm just calling, you know, just reaching out to say hello. And, you know, she kind of realized that was the deal. I was multitasking. And so that's my preferred method of communication. One last quick thing. So a bit later, I bought her first iPhone as a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
It should have been a prized possession of hers for quite a while. And she was spending some time with my middle sister in upstate New York. And she knew I was on the West Coast where we didn't get a lot of snow. And it had snowed there the night before.
Okay.
And there was about 2 feet of snow in the backyard. And so she took a picture with her iPhone and sent me a picture message. That's a MMS to California and said, hey.
That's how you know you had made it. You had transformed her technology collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in her 60s, late 60s.
See? See, older generation can learn. Absolutely. There you have it.
That's right.
So there you have it from Mr. Stephen Verhenny. Again, proud owner, president, and CEO of Sierra Bravo. Again, thank you so much for being here with us today. And again, you can find the Concierge Coaches Show on all social platforms as well. So we are the Concierge Coaches Show on Instagram, on Facebook, and on LinkedIn. You can also find us on the Concierge Coaches Show within LATalkRadio.com. So you can find all the podcasts archived there, as well as the Apple iTunes, which is now going to be Apple Music and Apple Plethora Store, right, as they're changing and pivoting their platform stuff over. But all the podcasts are going to be stored away there. You can find myself, again, Justin Nimmergood at Nimmergood, just lastname.com. So go there. You can learn more about myself. Again, Stephen, thank you for the time today.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure. Look forward to next time, folks. Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.